First TV headlines. Lebanon's Hezbollah says the claim that it was involved in Rafiq Hariri's assassination is being pushed forth by Israel. Also ahead this hour, six U.S.-led soldiers die during combat operations in Afghanistan as a helicopter crashes in the south of the country. And deadly crashes in northern Yemen as a government-backed militia attacks Houthis.
It's 2:30 in the morning here in the capital, Tehran. You're watching another bulletin of World News and Press TV.
Thanks a lot for joining us. Well, Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says the international tribunal investigating the 2005 assassination of the country's former premier Rafiq Hariri is an Israeli project to target the resistance. Sayed Hassan Nasrallah says the tribunal is also aimed at inciting division in the country. He dismissed as baseless allegations that several Hezbollah members as well as Syria were involved in the assassination. He said Tel Aviv should be accused instead. He says Israel had the motive and capability of carrying out the assassination, but the tribunal never takes this into consideration. Hariri was killed in a car bomb blast along with 20 other people in Beirut in February of 2005.
Well, meanwhile, five Lebanese men accused of spying for Israel have reportedly fled Lebanon. Lebanese media say former senior officer in the Lebanese army, Rassan al-Joud, is thought to have escaped to Germany. Meanwhile, security forces are searching for the other four suspects. The new development comes as the Lebanese government plans to file an official complaint against Israel with the United Nations Security Council. Beirut began a wave of arrests last year as part of an investigation about an extensive spy ring working for Tel Aviv. Well, the British government has proposed an amendment to its universal jurisdiction law.
If approved, the amendment will allow Israeli politicians and military officers who are accused of war crimes to travel to Britain without fear of being arrested. The UK Justice Secretary says universal jurisdiction cases should be proceeded with on the basis of solid evidence. He claims the UK's foreign policy will be damaged by what he calls weak legal cases. The proposed changes would apply to cases such as war crimes, torture, or hostage taking. Amnesty International has criticized the plans, saying they are unnecessary and send the wrong signals. A senior British legal advisor says the current procedure allows victims of crimes under international law to act quickly against suspects and should remain unchanged. In 2009, a British court issued an arrest warrant for Israel's former foreign minister Zipi Livni over war crimes committed in Gaza. Israel's defense minister Ehud Barak also faces war crimes accusations. Well, for more on that amendment, we're now joined by Alfred Lambermont Weber, who is an international lawyer who joins us on the line from Vancouver, Canada. Mr. Weber, as always, thank you for joining our broadcast. Now, the UK government has said this amendment rejects, quote, possible abuse by people trying to obtain arrest warrants for grave crimes on the basis of flimsy evidence to make a political statement or to cause embarrassment, end quote. What constitutes flimsy evidence?
Well, I think that this is a very unfortunate move by the UK. What this move does is that it undercuts the entire system of universal jurisdiction, which is based on the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. And all of the signatories of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court were directed to pass universal jurisdiction statutes in their own countries, allowing courts in those countries to hear war crimes prosecutions, and that's the whole purpose of the Rome Statute, because the Rome Statute envisioned the International Criminal Court as being the court of last instance, and it envisioned national courts around the world trying war criminals, because this is supposed to be the era in which war is a crime and is outlawed. Aggressive war was found to be the most egregious of all war crimes by the Nuremberg standards. And it was outlawed even in the UN Charter. So now, this is a cut. This is an attempt to shore back the universal jurisdiction of the Rome Statute, to which over 100 countries have signed on, onto the International Criminal Court. And I'm looking at the it says Israel hails twisted UK law change, so that one can imagine, even though the most recent complaint of this was with regard to the former president of Bosnia, Edjub Ganic, who claimed that his extradition case from the UK to Serbia was politically motivated.
Right.
One can see that perhaps.
If I may, Mr. Weber, I'd just like to move on to another aspect of this. Some pro-Israel Jewish leaders in the UK have welcomed this amendment as, I'm quoting them now, a correction of a legal anomaly that has been exploited for the purpose of specific political agendas. End quote. How was the call for justice over Livni's link to Operation Castlet, for example, exploitation in their eyes?
Well, in their eyes, they can claim whatever they want, but there is objective evidence that the IDF committed war crimes, committed crimes against humanity, and committed genocide in their aggressive war against Gaza, in their invasion of Gaza. And so, it was that universe that quite properly was enacted according to the Rome Statute, and that permitted lawsuits to be brought forward such that Israel and Israeli officials would be branded as what they are, which is war criminals. So there is nothing wrong with this. Once again, it is war criminals trying to escape culpability and accountability.
Right. Well, that was Mr. Alfred Lambermont Weber, international lawyer, joining us there on the line from Vancouver, Canada. Sir, as always, thank you very much for your insight.
Well, in other news, six U.S.-led foreign troops have lost their lives in separate incidents in southern Afghanistan. NATO says that two of its soldiers were killed in a helicopter crash in Helmand province. The soldiers' nationalities are still unknown. The Taliban have claimed responsibility for the crash and say the crash has left six foreign forces dead. NATO says four other troops were killed in a separate incident in the same province. Security sources say the deaths include two Britons, one American, and one Danish soldier. Foreign military fatalities have spiked in the past 2 months, with 102 in June alone. It was the highest monthly toll since the U.S.-led war began in 2001.
Elsewhere, violence has erupted once again in the north of Yemen between Houthi fighters and pro-government militia. The clashes come after about 5 months of relative calm, as a shaky truce kept any major violence at bay.
Northern Yemen has been rocked by fresh fighting. Clashes between Houthi fighters and pro-government militia have left dozens dead in the last 5 days. Speaking to Press TV, a Houthi spokesman said three of their soldiers are among the killed and blamed the new round of clashes on pro-government militia. The area was a scene of bloody clashes between Houthi fighters and Saudi-backed government troops last year. A truce was only agreed when Saudi troops withdrew from the country. The conflict seemed to turn into an all-out war when Riyadh started bombing across the Yemeni border in November. Saudi Arabia accused the Houthi fighters of infiltrating its borders. The Houthis also accused Saudi Arabia providing the Yemeni government with military hardware and intelligence. The war was hardly covered by mainstream media in the West, as well as a regional political front. There are also international considerations. The U.S. says Al-Qaeda could exploit instability across Yemen to turn the country into a launchpad for more international attacks. Yemen came into the spotlight after the U.S. reported a failed attempt to blow up an American airliner on Christmas Day. Washington said a Yemeni-trained militant was behind the attack. A lesser-known fact is that the U.S. had already quietly stepped up operations in Yemen about a year earlier. In June, Amnesty International said a U.S. cruise missile-carrying cluster bombs was behind a December 2009 attack in Yemen that killed dozens of civilians, including women and children. Yemen has its own domestic problems, too. A U.N. survey has revealed that 1 in 3 Yemenis suffer chronic hunger, and 1 in 5 of the North's population has been directly affected by war there. Against this backdrop, countries like the U.S. and Britain have called Yemen the new front on the war on terror. But can the impoverished country take more violence? And can countries like the U.S. and Britain afford a new war in the region?
Well, you're watching World News here on Press TV. It's time for a quick check of the headlines this hour. Lebanon's Hezbollah says the claim that it was involved in Rafiq Hariri's assassination is being pushed forth by Israel. 6 U.S.-led soldiers die during combat operations in Afghanistan as a helicopter crashes in the south of the country. And deadly clashes in northern Yemen as a government-backed militia attacks Houthis.
Well, coming up in the second half of this news bulletin, China comes up with a new and rather curious way to treat autism.
In Chad, a regional summit has rejected all charges made by the International Criminal Court against Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. The community of Sahel Saharan has refuted a genocide and war crimes against al-Bashir. The committee says the accusations by the world body do not contribute to bringing peace to this part of Sudan. This comes after the ICC added 3 genocide counts to the charges against al-Bashir a year after issuing a warrant for his arrest. Well, meanwhile, the EU has demanded Chad to arrest al-Bashir and hand him over to the court. The European Union says Chad must respect its obligations under international law and arrest al-Bashir. Well, Morocco has been cracking down on suspected terrorists since the 2003 Casablanca bombings.
This week, a Moroccan-Belgian man was sentenced to life in prison for having attempted 35 terrorist attacks in the past few years. Nour Fakim tells us the details.
After the Casablanca bombings of 2003, which killed 45 people, the Moroccan authorities arrested more than 2,000 suspected terrorists. The security forces have also broken up an Al-Qaeda-linked network believed to have been planning assassinations and terror attacks. The country is fighting a war against extremism, which terrorism experts say has its roots in Europe.
Moroccans have been recently recruited in the Sahel regions. The heads of terror cells in Morocco are European Moroccans.
Morocco is attempting to reinvent itself politically and internationally. Rabat has tentative steps taken in recent years towards genuine democracy, including fairer elections, greater linguistic and cultural freedoms, the investigation of past human rights abuses, and the legalization of a major Islamist political grouping, the Justice and Development Party.
It is very easy to encourage a young Moroccan to go to Iraq and fight the Americans when he has nothing here.
Since the 2003 Casablanca bombings, security has improved, but the root cause of terrorism, say the NGOs, is poverty and unemployment. Unemployment runs at 12% nationwide, but could be as high as 69% in rural areas, according to government figures.
The government should do more to encourage people to stay here. It should find out why many leave here to join the terrorist groups, although the poverty factor cannot be overlooked.
This week, a Moroccan-Belgian man charged with attempted terrorism attacks in 2008 was sentenced to life imprisonment. This clearly means the government is serious about the threat of terrorism. The bombings in Casablanca on May 2003 and in Madrid 2004 were both carried out almost entirely by Moroccan men. This fact is hard to swallow for many in a country that prides itself on its tolerant Islamic traditions and actively promotes itself as something of an exception within the Arab world. Nora Fakim, Press TV, Rabat.
The International Court of Justice has backed Kosovo's independence. The president of the UN's top court says Kosovo's unilateral secession from Serbia in 2008 has not violated international law. After the ruling, Serbia announced it will never recognize Kosovo's unilateral independence. It believes the court's ruling is against UN principles. Russia says its stance on Kosovo will not change and the ruling does not provide legal basis for Kosovo's independence. 69 countries, including the U.S. and most of European nations, have recognized Kosovo as a sovereign state. Kosovo unilaterally declared independence from Serbia in February 2008. Now, this came almost a decade after the 1998-99 war between Kosovo Albanians and Serbian forces.
Meanwhile, Venezuela has broken off diplomatic ties with Colombia after Bogota accused Caracas of serving as a rear base for Colombian rebels. Caracas has ordered Colombian diplomats to leave the country and close their embassy within 72 hours. The Venezuelan Foreign Ministry says orders have also been given to close the embassy in Bogota and to repatriate Venezuelan staff. Venezuela's announcement to break ties comes in response to Colombia's claim that rebels from the FARC and ELN are using Venezuela as a safe haven. Venezuela and Colombia froze diplomatic ties last year after Bogota and Washington signed a military agreement Caracas considered a threat to regional security. Meanwhile, China is practicing an unusual and controversial way to treat children suffering from autism.
Well, it seems to be using dolphins. Press News' Jenny Hammond has a story.
Autism, a developmental disorder which makes it difficult to communicate or to form relationships, was only officially recognized as a disability in China in 2006. However, since then, awareness has been growing slowly and different treatments have become available, even some of a more unusual nature, such as using interaction with dolphins.
The treatment is tailored to the individual child, but generally the child is encouraged to complete the task, such as saying a word, and if they do it, they are rewarded by being allowed to play with the dolphin.
As autism is a neural disorder, the theory is that when the dolphins emit their high-frequency ultrasonic waves, the sound stimulates dormant brain cells in the autistic children. While there is no known cure for autism, intervention can help to lessen disruptive behavior.
There is no cure for autism, so parents can only opt to improve their child's behavior so they can have a normal life in the future. Early treatment is very important because if a child does not learn basic skills such as speaking and social interaction before they have six, then it becomes impossible to learn.
The Chinese government says there are only about 100,000 people with autism in the entire country, but unofficial estimates put that number far higher.
The World Health Organization estimates somewhere between 600,000 to close to 2 million children in China have autism. That number, however, could be significantly larger since the government is not actively seeking those who have autism.
The dolphin therapy, which costs 2,500 yuan, about $369 per month, is designed to lessen symptoms associated with autism, but is only an assisted therapy and is not always effective. However, as there is still so little known about autism, the dolphin therapy is proving popular with Chinese parents who often have nowhere else to turn. Jenny Hammond, Press TV, Hangzhou, China.
Well, that's all for this edition of the World News here on Press TV. Be sure to visit our website, presstv.ir, throughout the day for the latest updates on all the news that we've covered in this broadcast and much more. As always, top right-hand corner of the page, you can see our Watch Live and audio streaming, so you can click on to watch us live or to listen to us live at any time.